one hand, one voice. The air of voice is heard with Yahela Voice. Now you are listening to Talk of the Town.
Talk of the Town
with Ray Hanania. Talk of the Town brought to you by LifeRun Medical Alert Systems.
And good afternoon. I'm Ray Hanania, and this is Talk of the Town Radio, broadcast live on YahalaVoice.com online and live on Chicago Radio 1450 AM. It's Friday, February 6th. I didn't change my notes there, Khalid. What's going on? Our producer is Khalid Khilfa. And if you want to call in during the show, we, of course, welcome your comments. We want you to share your opinion. We want to hear it. Our telephone call-in line is 708-321-1313, extension 1. Talk of the Town Radio is brought to you by LifeRun Medical Alert Systems, the best emergency system for seniors and people in healthcare need available today. Call 1-800-421-3366. Broadcast live on radio at 1450 AM and online at YahalaVoice.com every Friday at 4 PM. Talk of the Town Radio is rebroadcast online on Mondays at 11 AM, and it's available in podcast form at iTunes and on our news website, thearabdailynews.com, where you can read my columns syndicated by Creator Syndicate. I also write locally here in Chicago for several newspapers, the Des Plaines Valley News, Southwest News Herald, the Regional News, and the Payless Reporter. But don't tell anybody I'm an Arab, okay? They just think I got wacky views. They think I'm kind of a dark-looking Italian. Think I, a Hispanic Italian. I look kind of like a, so they accept me as a reporter for these papers. Listen, we got a great show today. I really follow this person for a long time, and I really like her. We're going to be talking with Asra Nomani, a Muslim woman who is on a mission to help raise the voice of moderate Islam and drown out the extremists in the Arab and Muslim community. She's taken a lot of grief about standing up to the fanatics, partly because the fanatics hate free, intelligent women as much as they hate moderate Arabs, moderate Muslims. Me, the extremists are exploiting frustration of mainstream Muslims and mainstream Arabs who are abused not just in the West, but in the Middle East too. So we need to do something and see that the conflict is not Arab versus Jew or Arab versus Muslim versus Christian or versus anybody, but rather it comes down to moderates versus extremists. And the extremists hate to hear that. They hate that argument. They know it's so true. They get so upset, and we take a beating. But the community needs to recognize for what it really is worth, and we're going to explore that with her. She was also a friend of one of the first people who unfortunately had been beheaded. I don't know if you remember Daniel Pearl. Sometime in January 2002, he disappeared when he went, I believe, to meet with some people. It might have been in Pakistan at the time. I have to double check that. I think he was going to meet with, he was in Pakistan and he was murdered there because of who he was. It was just outrageous. But Asra was his friend. Worked together with him at the Wall Street Journal, and we'll talk a little bit about that. 13 years ago, a couple weeks ago, that's just unbelievable how fast time is flying. I think we have Asra on the phone. Asra?
Yeah, how are you doing?
Good.
Thanks so much for having me, Ray.
Listen, first of all, you and I had a great conversation earlier in the week, and I think people like us, people who love Islam, who love Christianity, who love being Arab, who love, you know, the Muslim people, in a moderate, smart way, we need to bring them together and get them to understand that when we say that we're against extremism, we're not attacking them, and they shouldn't be conditioned into believing, you know, good people are being attacked because we stand up to the extremists.
Yeah, and I think when, you know, when we talked, and your listeners will appreciate this, we realized that, you know, we hadn't found each other because so often I explained to you, under siege, we isolate ourselves.
Yes.
And I know you've done a great job trying to connect with people, but something dramatic has happened to me over the last few weeks, and, you know, we'll talk more about that during our time together, but the wonderful gift of all of that is I get to know you now.
Well, that, I think that's pretty cool, having had a conversation with you. You know, I've heard so many things, and, you know, I think part of the idea is let's bring this stuff out, because we shouldn't hide from the fanatics who are out there. They call me all kinds of stuff. The extremists write stuff about me. The internet is good on one hand, and it's bad, but you know what? The bad doesn't bother me, because I was told a long time ago, there's really no such thing as bad publicity. And that's what the extremists only have.
Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, though, the thing that I think is very important for us to realize, too, is it's not only the extremists that try to silence debate. It's moderates, too.
They're because they're afraid, right?
Yeah. And I mean, we expect criticism from the extremists, but I think what's been most disheartening to me and most shocking is how it is that moderates also try to control who speaks and what they say. And that's what I found has been just very surprising to me, that people who I thought would support any person, any human being having voice, actually want to shame those people that they don't agree with and then try to silence them as well.
I think you raise a great point, because I agree with that, and I think part of that comes from this what we might call being victims, this victimization process. When you're victimized, you think people would stand up against the people who are making you victims, but what happens is that people who are victims and who are beat and oppressed, or who feel that they're oppressed, turn on themselves. Instead of standing up to the extremists, we end up turning on our own people, because it's easier for you and me to fight with each other, for me to attack you, than it is for me to attack the extremists, because they're tougher to deal with. You, I can attack in the community, because people in the community will, we have Muslims and Arabs, and I know you're not Arab, but you're Muslim. We have this sense of, we don't want to air the dirty laundry either. And when we fight with the extremists, they always say, Ray, don't mention them. Leave them alone. I go, why? We need to expose them for what they are.
Yeah, you know, Ray, one of the reasons I'm really excited to talk to you is because I am from South Asian culture and from Muslim culture. You're from Arab culture and you're from Christian Arab culture, right?
Yes.
But what I believe transcends all of our cultural identities, and it expresses itself in other communities as well, you know, from Latin America to Africa to Irish Catholics, is a sense of honor and shame. And I really believe that if we could just contemplate and think about that deeply, and really examine how that influences our own behavior and then the way that we interact with other people, we would be able to evolve much more deeply, so that we could come to a point where we don't hurt others and actually help the community and ourselves come to places of healing, rather than staying in places of attack, victimhood, like you said, and really, to me, very base human values.
I want to kind of explore your experiences, because, to be honest, you know, being Arab, and again, I am Christian, but I always kind of, I explain that I'm really Muslim by culture, because the majority of Arabs are Muslim. I live in a Muslim world. I live in the Muslim community here in the United States.
Yeah.
And one thing I've noticed that my own community really doesn't like to talk about, and this ties to what we were just talking about, when I speak out in defense of women, there's a problematic issue for even moderate Arabs. On the one hand, they know women in the Arab and Middle East and Islamic, and even the conservative Christian Arab community, are oppressed. But on the other hand, they don't want to talk about it, because they feel that it makes their beautiful culture and religion look bad, and they have a hard time separating the two parts. How do you deal with it, and what's it like, you know, for you, being a Muslim woman, speaking about these very issues that we're talking about?
Well, you know, just to introduce myself to your listeners a little bit, I was born in India. I was born into a very conservative Muslim family. We come from northern India, this state called Uttar Pradesh, which your listeners would be interested to know about. An estimated 1 out of 35 people in the world come from that state. Wow. So don't try to pick a fight with me because I got a lot of cousins, you know, just like everyone else. But, you know, Uttar Pradesh is the birthplace of a lot of different interpretations of Islam, and the one that my family raised me in and I was born into is a very conservative interpretation where my mother wore the full niqab and into her teen years, and she ended up marrying into my father's family where my grandmother, my dadi, my paternal grandmother, was a real feminist. She literally ripped the veil off my mother's face when my mother arrived at the train station in the city of Hyderabad. So
wow.
What I am, yeah, it's really dramatic, and, you know, it's just many people shocking. It was shocking to my mother. She remembers it and remembers feeling at that moment, but she felt naked because she had never been allowed as a teen girl to walk with her face bare in public. And here was the new authority figure in her life, her mother-in-law, telling her she actually had to go bare in her, on her face. And really from that moment forward, my mother, by choice, did not cover her hair or cover her face because she really didn't prescribe to that ideology. She just was forced to do it because of her family.
Right.
But, you know, what happened for me is that I grew up then, first in New Jersey and then in West Virginia. I came to America when I was 4, with a very progressive interpretation of Islam. My father's a scientist, and so he really supported the idea of ijtihad, this idea of critical thinking. And so this is what I grew up with. And so for me, when I would see just, to me, great inequities like segregation of women in the parties and the refusal of the mosque leaders to allow women into the mosque, I just thought to myself, this isn't right. And that's really, to just answer your question, you know, sort of in terms of my own self and my own soul, this is what I inherited, you know, this ancestry of critical thinking and feminism. And so that's what has always given me clarity and strength, and I always have my parents. Fortunately, they're healthy and very supportive, but I could never have stood up and said a word or taken any actions for the cause of women's rights, except that my parents had my back always,
and they
still do.
And it's interesting because a lot of, and again, my experience is mainly with Arabs and the Arab community and the Arab Muslim community, the idea that, you know, a woman would stand up and do the speaking is, you know, I mean, they always say, oh, no, we treat women equally. But when I look around, you know, in the, you know, to me, it's bigger than just the Arab and the Muslim world. Women's rights, you know, they still don't have full rights here in the United States, but it's a progressive movement. They don't have rights in Saudi Arabia to drive.
Right.
There's oppression in the Arab world, but there's also oppression in Israel. My wife is Jewish. We see it. But for some reason, the world focuses on Muslims and makes it sound like only Muslims discriminate against women when that's not really the case. It seems like it's easier because in Islam, modesty is built into the religion. In Christianity, some Christian religions, you know, embrace a very severe definition of modesty, but in other Christian, even Christian Arabs, especially in Lebanon and even Palestine before this conflict, you know, we would have been part of the Miss Universe pageant. Why not? You know, why not celebrate the beauty of women? Some people frown on that and they get angry when we bring it up.
Right. Well, I know, and there's, you know, a great tradition of great success in these beauty pageants also. And so, you know, the thing is, I just disagree a little bit in that I do not think that people believe that Islam and Muslim communities have a monopoly on sexism and misogyny and gender discrimination. This country has improved, but there are still so many battles. Why would...
Right.
why would the woman Emma Watson write from Harry Potter? I hope you've done your he for she hashtag, because she's got a whole UN campaign of men supporting women in feminism. And that's a Western campaign, because they realize that there's wage inequity, there's gender discrimination, and there's so many issues inside of the West also. But I, you know, going back to the point that you made earlier about why people want to not air our dirty laundry. The thing that I've thought a lot about deeply then, it's part of my training. I studied cross-cultural communications as a graduate student, is, and I'd love for your listeners to sort of really reflect on this deeply and think about it in their own lives. You know, we come from what they say in cross-cultural communication is collective societies, where the collective of a society or the community trumps individual rights. And so, for example, my mom and dad, they didn't marry who they wanted to marry, right? They married
my parents
too.
My parents too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, because the individual is less important. And so if you do an inverted pyramid and the really like wide end of the pyramid is the top.
Right.
And you say, what is the most important part of your identity? Is it your religion? Is it your tribe? Is it your clan? Is it your extended family? Is it your nationality? And then what is least important? In collective societies, the individual will be lower than in individual societies like the West. And so the hallmark of collective societies is a sense of honor and shame. And what happens is the individual, and then particularly the woman, carries the honor of the family and the community, and she has that burden on her shoulders. And so too do men. So thus, you know, a man can't always marry who he wants to marry. A man can't always do
right.
the job that he wants to do. And so in this argument for feminism, I believe it's actually an argument for humanism. It's an argument for respect and celebration of human and individual rights, so that the men too can be liberated from the prisons in which societal expectations place them.
We're talking with Asra Nomani. She is an Indian American journalist, author, a feminist. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to talk with her. And if that's okay, Asra, you want to hang on the line here while we do these commercials?
Oh, absolutely.
Great.
Sure.
When we come back, I want to talk about, Daniel Pearl, because that to me was a real tragedy. I also want to talk about this whole
absolutely.
Thing about ISIS and ISIL, you know, how they've, you know, the way they killed that soldier, they beheaded some Americans, but it was the burning of this Jordanian soldier that seemed to ignite the moderates, in my view, in the Arab world to finally stand up and say, we need to do something. And yet I still heard people say, oh, why are you complaining about that when look what Israel does to these little babies? Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying the
right.
babies killed by Israel shouldn't be championed too. I'm saying, why do we kind of have to push one down to make another one look better? So we're going to talk a little bit about
right.
that right after this break.
We don't have to have more.
Yeah, there doesn't
yeah.
have to be. We can
Perfect.
Look at each individual act and define it and protest it. We don't have to make it relative. And I think that's an issue that many Arabs and Muslims, people from the Middle East have a problem with. They, you know, they want to bring it back to what's important to them rather than the bigger principle that applies to others. But we are again on with Asra Nomani. I'm Ray Hanania. This is Talk of the Town Radio here at Yahala Voice, 1450 AM Radio, February 6th, Friday. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue talking with Asra. We'll be right back right after these messages.
Yahala Voice, a soulful Arabic family.
Home Life Furniture. آخر صيحات الأثاث وكل ما تحتاج من مفروشات Home Life Furniture الأمانة الأخوة والدقة في المواعيد
No credit needed to finance Everyone is approved at Home Life Furniture 13449 South Cicero Avenue in Crestwood, Illinois 708-631-3627 Mention Yahala Voice and your delivery is free Get $200 off when you spend $1,500
You have a medical alert device. When you press the button for help, can you talk through your pendant? With many companies, you still have to talk through the base unit, and that's not much help in an emergency. The answer, LifeRun Medical Alert Systems. Simply press the button and talk to a live operator right through the pendant. If your device can't do that, upgrade to LifeRun today. The system is free, the shipping is free, and the monitoring fee is less than a dollar a day. Call LifeRun now at 1-800-421-3366 or order online at LifeRun.com.
Mancari Chrysler Jeep Dodge's 72-hour sale starts now. $30 million in inventory, $5 million in discounts, and $25 million to lend will be available for this public sale at Mancari's Chrysler Jeep Dodge at Oak Lawn. Now through Monday, get $12,000 off MSRP. Get 0% for 72 months, plus a $4,500 rebate. 800 factory cars are on display. Brand new Jeep Cherokees, Grand Cherokees, minivans, Ram trucks, and more. $5 million in discounts will be made available on Mancari's $30 million of new car inventory. Stop what you're doing right now and get to Mancari's in Oak Lawn. $12,000 off MSRP. 0% for 72 months, plus $4,500 in rebates. $30 million in inventory. And bank reps on site with $25 million to lend. You will drive today. Hurry. This public sale will absolutely end Monday. Sale hours extended till midnight at Mancari Chrysler Jeep Dodge on 95th Street, Oak Lawn.
On select models, $1,389 per thousand with zero down, with approved credit plus tax, title, license, and dock fee.
What's going on, everybody? I'm Rush, here to tell you about the best talk show on the planet. It's called Rise Up. If you're looking for a show that talks about all the issues that matter to you, then you need to listen to Rise Up. From the latest stories happening back home in Palestine, the Middle East, and of course, all the stories happening in our own backyard in Chicago, and of course, across the nation. That is what Rise Up is all about. Plus, Rise Up is a program that wants to hear from you. Call the show, 708-321-1313, extension 1. Oh, by the way, I also do this show with this guy named Bob. We call him the Great American. The guy thinks he's an expert when it comes to Arab-related news. Actually, he's not so bad. So listen to Rise Up every Wednesday, 4:30 to 6 p.m. Central Time on Chicago's 1450 a.m. and YahalaVoice.com.
علي صوتك مع صوت يا هلا.
ايوه اعطوني لويحه مش شكري اعطوني لويحه انا سجي معدم يا سري فضل ويمشي بالشمال يلي طولك.
And welcome back to Talk of the Town Radio here at YahalaVoice.com, 1450 AM radio live. Our number is 708-321-1313, extension 1. If you have a comment, question, you want to talk to our guest, Asra Nomani. She's an author. She's out there and very courageous, because for a Muslim woman to stand up and address these issues, it's not easy for a male Muslim. In fact, as an activist for many years, people would come up and say, Ray, don't criticize them. Don't criticize the extremists. Better to ignore them. Better to, you know, just kind of let them do what they want to do, and let's focus on the areas where we agree. And I think that's a major mistake. Trying to focus on areas that we agree with the extremists is wrong. The extremists are using Palestine to benefit themselves. They don't care about Palestine. Why would they kill all those people? That one Jordanian soldier that they burned alive? It's all about propaganda and communications and PR and messaging. That's why they shock and kill these people so terribly, because they're appealing to the oppressed, people who feel oppressed. And they want to bring him in. We're talking about these and many other issues with our guest, Asra Nomani, who's an author. And again, like I said, a very courageous lady. You've gotten a lot, I'm sure, of criticism. Asra, define in your words, what's your basic message when you talk about your experience as a Muslim woman?
Well, I, you know, really try to speak from the heart about my experience also as a human being. I believe that we should all encourage each other to be able to live self-determined lives in which our lives can be in congruence with our beliefs. And so what I mean by that is, you know, we shouldn't encourage each other to live in the shadows, or with secrets in the closet, or with topics not discussed. We should live with openness and and self-determination as well as empowerment. You know, some of your listeners might not know what it is that I actually stand for, but what happened for me, as you said earlier, was that, you know, on January 23rd, 2002, I was renting a home in Karachi, Pakistan, and I was working at the Wall Street Journal at the time, on book leave and freelancing in Pakistan for a number of different publications. I had a really great friend, Danny Pearl, who came to my house with his wife, Marianne, for an interview, and he didn't come back. He was the first of so many journalists that ended up with a target on his back. 5 weeks later, we discovered that he had been so brutally beheaded. I just was shocked, because I could not even imagine. I just had never even contemplated during every single moment of that 5 weeks trying to find Danny that that could be the ending. And that was really the moment in which I awakened as a human being, trying to stand up for progressive, moderate interpretation of Islam and also the spirit of humanity in this world that would be kind to others and compassionate. And so those are really a lot of my driving, you know, principles. And, you know, the word in Arabic for intentions is niyat, and my intention is quite simply to try to make this world a better place, because I stood there at the abyss of this great darkness and hoped that nobody else would have to ever experience such darkness as I had seen.
And there are issues that people like, they, you know, I don't want to rehash all the garbage that's thrown at you by these fanatics, but obviously you're a threat to them, because they single you out, especially recently.
Yeah.
They've really gone after you. Was there some specific thing that set them off? Because in my book, when you become the target of the fanatics, you are doing something good. And when they're not attacking me, I feel
again,
bad. Go ahead, sorry.
Right. Well, it's just, you know, again, I want us to have a really honest conversation in our communities, because it's not just the fanatics. It's moderates. It's people in the middle. And what happened is, for me personally, I learned in the fourth week of trying to find Danny that I was pregnant. I had had a boyfriend, a Pakistani Muslim man, who I had fallen in love with in Karachi. Took a little too seriously, I guess, the 1960s patches, make love, not war, right?
Right.
And there I was. But the day Danny disappeared, many of your listeners will also appreciate, the Pakistani intelligence came and visited my boyfriend. He arrived back at my house just so scared. Like, I thought he had seen a ghost. I just had never seen his eyes so wide and so much fear in his eyes. And he said, "I can't come around anymore." And I was devastated. I thought, you know, of all people in this country, that wasn't my own. But 4 weeks later, I discovered I was pregnant with him. And he decided then, too, that he would not, you know, rise to the occasion. But when I called my mother and my father wrote me back an email. And he wrote back, "Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. God is beneficent. God is merciful." And in those words, he freed me from living with shame. And my mother also said, "Asra, live true, live honestly." My daddy, though, remember her, the feminist?
Right.
She was such a progressive, but then she, in the 21st century, then said, "You know, Asra, why don't you just tell everyone you had artificial insemination?" You know, so she just, like, came up with her own idea. But what would that mean? That would mean living life with a lie. And so it was in the very personal and in intimate place in my heart and in my life that I decided my son was born. I named him Shibli, which means my lion cub in Arabic. And I gave him the name Daniil for Daniel, my friend. And when I saw him so perfect, I said, "I cannot live with shame. And I lived from that moment with truth and wrote also about this choice and wrote about the fact that women punished, criminalized, and shamed for being pregnant outside of marriage should not be. That, you know, these are all personal choices that we make in our lives, and at a minimum, they should be, left alone, but most importantly, women should be given compassion and kindness, and definitely not stonings.
And what's fascinating about this is that you bring up a lot of issues, but instead of addressing the issues, they attack you personally. Because I've heard some nasty things said, oh, she had a baby out of wedlock, she's blah, blah, blah. They say horrible things about you, but only because they don't like...
Kind.
Well, listen, you're, because they don't like what you stand for, so
well,
they...
kind when you say blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, no, I don't want to repeat the ugliness that represents them, not you,
but
me.
Let's see, yeah, mm-hmm. Right, but let's be really clear. What has happened, what happens is this idea that women carry the honor is, you know, something that happens in high schools. It happens, you know, in Arab societies and Muslim societies.
Right.
And so oftentimes women are dismissed. They say it comes from American society that they say that women are either called a slut or a nut. So this is the strategy that's
like it's westernization that poisoned you. You were poisoned by being westernized.
Right.
But the truth is, this happens a lot in our culture. We just don't like to talk about it. We pretend it doesn't exist. And the men who are involved in it want to pretend like they don't want you around because they want you to bear the shame, but they don't have the courage to stand up and account for what they've been involved in. You know, it's horrible because these are issues we should be able to talk about, you know, and discuss in a reasoned way without somebody calling you a name or attacking me.
Right.
You know, and we don't do it.
And be kind. Be kind to each other. And I'll tell you, you just bring back so many thoughts in my mind, but just last week, I had a little problem with my AC unit. So a man walked in, my mother called insurance, and the electrician came. His name was Ali, so he was Muslim. He turned out he was from Pakistan. And of course, you know how everybody in the community, in 2 minutes, they need to know everything.
Right.
Well, son, how old is he? 12 years old. Oh, and your job? What is your job?
Right.
I'm a journalist. And your husband? What does your husband do? I'm not married. But you have son.
Right.
And I'm
it's
not
like
married.
Incomprehensible.
And he said, sitting at my dining table, right after I'd given him a check for $70 for the visit, he said to me, "Are, then you are with guna," which is the word for sin.
Yeah.
And I looked him straight in the eyes then, Ray, and I said to him, "No, I am big guna.
Why
I am without sin, and I am without shame."
Why is it that God can look at you and forgive, accept you, but we can't? That we want to impose some anger against you. What difference does it make? Why wouldn't he say, well, you must have a story, understanding what happened is important. That's terrible. What's the point of attacking you?
Yeah.
To make him feel better, maybe about his own guilt. You know what I'm saying?
You know, I think that, yeah, I do. And I thought about this long and hard because, you know, just like the attacks that you receive, you know, it's a universal phenomena. So it's personal to me, it's personal to you, but there's a larger, deeper dynamic going on. And ultimately what I've meditated on is that in these collective societies, you know, honor is very valued and shame is the mechanism for controlling the community and the society.
Yes.
And so if you see somebody going outside the group, outside the collective, honoring their individual rights would mean then denying the collective truth. And that is then why it's so integral in tribal-based honor-shame societies to try to destroy the individual.
Right.
And that's why I think that these kind of personal attacks happen.
Well, it's like, it's almost like what using stereotypes and racism, it's like you put a fool and an intelligent person together. Obviously, just on their own merits, arts, the intelligent person would rise up, become very successful. The fool would just disappear. But in order for the fool to oppress you, to become better than you, they have to use things like shame. They have to use stereotypes.
Right.
They have to attack you. They have to bring you down. So they don't elevate themselves. These horrible people use stereotypes.
Right.
They use name calling. They use slander to bring you down so that it can artificially elevate them in the eyes of the community around them. Unfortunately, a lot of our leaders are like that. They want you.
Yeah.
They don't want you gone. They want you because they use you as a distraction so that people focus on what they
right.
tell the world is the problem of the world, but you're not the problem of the world. We got such bigger problems to focus
right.
on, but they don't want to focus on them.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
the issues
and,
you bring
you know,
up, the
uh-huh.
issues you bring up, they can't answer them. The only way they can answer an issue that is unanswerable is by attacking you. And if they can attack you, they can
yeah.
then take your issue and wrap what they've said about you around your issue, which could be right or wrong or whatever, but they can bring you down. That's the only
mm-hmm.
way they can do it.
Right.
So when they attack me personally, I always assume the reason they're attacking me personally, they can't argue with my logic. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah. Well, you're making a very important point, because even when you say logic, I love neuroscience. I love the study of psychology, and without having a PhD in it, what I've learned is that logic sits in our prefrontal, right, the prefrontal cortex of our brain. This is the front of the brain, and ideas, feelings, emotions, grievances, hurts, wounds, shame, that sits in the back of the brain. And I very deeply, because after my friend Danny's murder, I experienced one of the worst trauma of my life, right? This was something that was unfathomable to me.
Yeah.
And I responded to it by really shutting down my emotional state and really going into the prefrontal, and I had to investigate every detail of Danny's murder. I didn't allow healing for my own emotional state. And so what I realized is that when we don't heal the back of our brain, we really can't function in a healthy way in this society. And I'm saying this about myself also. You know, we can't live. We can't connect. The reason why I'm connecting to you right now is because I went down in my own personal journey to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, to the ends of this earth, you know, the Hades of this world, the underworld. And I had to look Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the alleged mastermind of the 9/11 attacks and the self-confessed murderer of Danny, I had to look him in the eyes. And when I did, I realized there's nothing I can accomplish even sitting here. I can't bring Danny back, and I need to work on my own healing and my own grieving. And so over these 2 years, that's what I've been doing. And finally, a couple weeks ago, I wrote an article about the Honor Brigade, is that what I call it? This loose but very strategic and orchestrated network of people who try to destroy others. And I called it out, and something remarkable has happened for me over the last couple of weeks, which is I have completely lifted the yoke of that shame that others have tried to put on me.
Good.
And it's healing, it's liberating, and it's beautiful. And it allows me to connect on a human level, still thinking, like you just said, rationally, though, right?
Right.
And that's what, when we talk about the quote, the people who are insensitive to us as human beings, I know that somewhere in the back of their brain, they have such wounds and such hurts that the only solution that they have is to try to hurt others. But, and I wish for them healing. I really do. Like, as just one human being to another, I wish to know what bothers them so much, what grieves them so much. But ultimately, what the psychologists tell me is if a person lives and chooses a culture of victimhood and a life of victimhood,
right.
There's nothing that another person can do to help
right.
them.
That victimization, the victimhood, that whole dynamic that if you embrace it, you will accept those things, and that's why a lot of people in our community stand silent when people speak out, you know, against you or me or others. They feel that, you know, because of victimization, they don't want to challenge the extremists, because in their world, the people who are the extremists seem to be rising. Remember that whole thing about artificial elevation? They suddenly lose perspective
uh-huh.
and think that the extremist who's attacking and calling you names or me names, they look like they're rising above us. So the majority of people in the community look at them and rise and say, wow, that person, in spite of the fact that I don't agree with everything they do, they look like they're succeeding, and I don't want to be with shame. And it's backwards. In reality,
wow.
are we
That's
any different,
yeah.
though, like other societies? I mean, Arabs and Muslims, I think we go through what everybody goes through. Except the difference is here in America and in the West, in a lot of countries, if somebody had a baby out of wedlock, or if somebody had a view, you know, that they didn't agree with, other people would stand up and speak out on your behalf from our community. And I bet not that many people have done that with you, because I know they haven't done that with me.
I hope that every listener that's here with us today and others will support you and encourage you, and because you are a human being. At the end of it all, you are a man who is using the gifts that he was given to try to make this world a better place. And instead of trying to destroy you, they can disagree with you. But do it with civility. Do it with
kindness. Let's have a discussion, right? Let's have a discussion about...
Right.
You want to argue about whether a woman should have a child out of wedlock? Okay, let's talk about it. You want to talk about can we criticize and dissect our religions? You know, let's be able to talk about it. Can we look at the, you know, like ISIS and ISIL and the dictators in the Arab world? Can we talk about them without falling into the trap of getting into a political fight? You know, too often we can't even just discuss the basics, you know, and just have a civil discussion.
Right.
You and I don't have to agree 100%, but sometimes the extremists insist that you accept everything they
right.
say 100%. But a moderate like you and me, we don't have to agree 100%. We just have to recognize that
right.
we each respect each other.
Yeah, and, you know, you mentioned the sad, sad burning of the Jordanian Air Force pilot. You know, I watched every single second of the
horrible. I
awful,
couldn't even do it.
Video.
It was, yeah.
Yeah. It was 26 seconds of hell on this earth for this man, but what I really wanted to examine was the rest of the 20-some minutes. I wanted to understand what is it, what were the messages, what was the symbolism? Well, you would enjoy this. These guys loved stealing clips from Hollywood movies, of course.
Right.
And ironically, movies that glorify and celebrate the U.S. Marines and Iwo Jima and other, you know, moments of battle valor for the Americans, but they stole those images. And yet, the constant theme for them was the grievances, the so many grievances that they have, starting with the Crusades, of course. And it reminded me of this idea that this FBI agent once told me that he had understood about people and cultures, that we can become wound collectors. We collect the wounds that we feel, either as individuals or as societies. And what we have to do is we have to make a choice, I think, in each one of our lives, whether we're going to just live and feed and deepen the wounds in our lives, or if we're going to try to bring healing both to ourselves and to the community and society at large for progress, you know, not for and because feeding wounds only brings depression, anger, violence also. And this is, to me, like the deeper contemplation we need to make in Muslim and Arab cultures, is whether we're going to celebrate life or we're going to just keep feeding the wounds.
I love the point that you bring up and the understanding of the whole collectiveness of how we view each other, that it's not about the individual, that we do have an upside down pyramid in our culture. And I bet a lot of cultures do in different ways. And the way that, you know, that we deal with these things, that, you know, I would love to see a conference of moderates come together and address these, because there are extremists in every society. There are extremists in Israel. There are extremists in America. There are extremists in the Arab world. There are extremists every place. The difference, though, is the level of how loud the moderates are able to stand up and confront that extremism. I think we do it very well here in the United States. We need to do it better when it comes to extremism against, you know, Muslims and Arabs, the stereotyping. But I think that comes from an education of the mainstream society. Help them to understand that we're no different than they are. You know, and if the extremists are the only people talking, what do you expect the average American to believe about Islam when he sees that on TV? There's no big dialogue in our community taking place.
And I think that we just feed the misunderstanding when we live in a house of mirrors. And we just try to project the perfect image of Arabs, of Indians, of South Asians, of Muslims. You know, people can't be fooled. And so they want an honest conversation. So whenever I would talk about, you know, an issue of importance to me, which is the access of women in mosques, I would hear back from the community and the men especially, but also the women and moderates also, don't shame the community. People will think we're backwards. Well, you know what? You do treat women with second-class status in most of the mosques in this country and this world. We have to hide behind shower curtains that are literally installed as the divider behind which women are supposed to sit. We're put in basements by the bathrooms. You know, we're most certainly never given the right to speak from the pulpit. And so these are truths, and you're not going to kid anybody by hiding them. We need to deal with them
and move forward as
communities and societies.
Yeah,
and people aren't fools.
Right.
The American society is not a fool. They've lived through the Inquisition. They've lived through the worst parts of, you know, of interpretation inside their own communities. Christianity was once used to sanction slavery, as, you know, President Obama talked about at the prayer breakfast this week. They get it. They know that this isn't all about Islam. They know that this is about a unique battle that we have against an interpretation that the Saudis started exporting in the 1970s. They get it. And we don't need to make excuses or act, you know, play this game of denial, demonization, and deflection in order to protect the, quote, image of the community. We have to live with no shame and live and act honorably to get honor.
Now, we're down to the final minutes. I just want to say that I think the bottom line is that we need to live with true freedom for all people. It doesn't matter what your religion, what your gender. Women in my community, it's important to me that they have a real choice. And a real choice means that instead of just having two choices, they should have three choices. One choice, maybe they want to pray with other women behind a screen. If that's the real choice, let them do it.
Right.
I don't mind. Maybe they want to pray by themselves off to the side. Or maybe they want to pray with men. And men who want to pray with women who don't care, let them have the choice. And you want to create three areas for just men, just women, and those who want to stand together. Let them do that. I'm not against it. But what's so upsetting to me.
Yeah, because.
Go ahead.
When people are denied choice. Because basically when you say that women have to have the subordinate situation, you're then denying the women who are comfortable praying beside men and the men who are comfortable praying beside women, you're denying them their choice and their expression of interpretation of faith in our communities.
Well, Asra, how would people get a hold of you? I know you have a website at asranomani.com.
Yes.
You have a number of books. I think they can look those up on Amazon. But tell us real quick the names of your books. We only got a couple minutes, but it's...
Sure. Well, yes, and my name is spelled A-S-R-A and then N-O-M-A-N-I. So just go to my website, and then I have my email address. I'm on Facebook. Please become my friend. And I'm on Twitter just with Asra Nomani. My first book was Tantrika, Traveling the Road of Divine Love, which was a lot about finding our personal identities, both from issues of sexuality to issues of public space. And my second book was called Standing Alone in Mecca. No, I'm not delusional. I know that there were millions of people around me when I did the pilgrimage to Mecca. But my deeper point is that we all do ultimately stand alone in the struggle in our lives to live fully realized as human beings. And my hope for everybody is that they can live fully realized, self-determined lives, both men and women, people of all faiths and non-faiths, so that we can coexist in peacefulness and in kindness and passion to each other.
I think it's fascinating. I think you also have a film out, right, The Mosque in Morgantown, which is kind of about your experience in Islam. Is that it? I know we don't have a lot of time to go through it, but people should look it up, I think, if that's okay.
Please.
Asra, listen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
We need to stay in touch because, you know, the war is not over. The extremists are going to go berserk over this interview. And I welcome it. I mean, let's have an open discussion. Let's have an open debate. Let's talk about everything. You know, that's what true freedom is all about. Asra, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Ray. You're a champion for civil discourse. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. That's Asra Nomani. Her website is asranomani.com. I think you should check it out, and we should have a discussion about the issues that she brought up and brings up every day courageously. Not easy to do, but she does it. I'm Ray Hanania. I want to thank Khaled Khilfa for running our board, and all of you out there for listening. And don't forget, you can hear this again on Monday at 11 o'clock here at YahalaVoice.com. Later, you can go to our website at thearabdailynews.com and download the podcast. I'm Ray Hanania. I'll see you next Friday and talk to you then. Have a great week. Bye-bye, everybody.
Yahala Voice, connecting the Arab voice globally.